Jane Latour interviewing Irene Soloway on August 31st, 1994.
Yeah, this woman teaching the apprentice program. It's just to increase our numbers.
Irene, last time we talked was long about 90, 91.
Provide support.
And so a lot of things have happened since then. I'd like you to tell me about changes that you see in your local, in terms of, or in the carpenters,
get recognized as a legitimate committee.
Women in the trades, any observations about that?
Mailings and,
how long does that take? That's been I remember when we had the hearings in New York City, Charles Fleming sitting there and saying that would be no problem.
I've been in the Carpenters Union since 79.
Well, now they let us do stuff, but it's not really recognized. Now they say, okay, you can use the coffee
almost
machine,
15
and
years.
The coffee pot, and you have this room, all like that, but it's still not
when
exactly...
When I first came into the union, equitable, as a full-grown adult, you know, woman, apprentice,
it's hard with other so few.
Like-minded
so
women
few.
And a diverse group of women, but mostly who had experience in life before they came into the Carpenters Union.
Well, to increase our numbers,
we
approach more of the women, like
try
women,
to
lobby,
inform the Carpenters Union of
school,
what we thought
to get them
they needed to do. To make the union receptive to women and to to be inclusive.
To the women that
and
to,
we were
support group for them
over a period of time
our efforts to,
became aware of this process that the Carpenters Union was not interested in fresh new ideas coming from rank and file. We came in with ideas about having sexual harassment training for the men in construction. We came in with ideas about having a women's committee that would address the issues of women in construction. We came in with ideas about how the apprenticeship school could be more in touch with the apprentices around issues of ethnicity.
Yeah, but she goes all over the place,
race,
like talking
and,
to like she's going to go to
Beijing. And what
next
we were always
year,
told was,
like to too, some
we're all one union and we're all brothers, and there's no
like
need
that,
for these to point out these differences
Clinton
because
just
we're all carpenters.
Washington
and was
really supportive of this.
And
she's really,
so
really interested
specific
in getting young
issues
women,
for
like
women were never
before they decide what they want to be like
during
early,
that time,
like
but now almost 15 years later, they actually are being addressed.
And
so that
she feels
in terms of,
should be like
yes, there is actually a women's committee now that's sanctioned. It's not an official committee, the Carpenters Union, but it's sanctioned to meet within the Carpenters school.
The project
advertised in the Carpenters paper that there is such a committee and who the contact people are, so there's an acknowledgement of this committee. And there is specific training, sexual harassment training for men and being done by women who are carpenters. Graduates of our school who are now teaching at the school, which is an important part of the program. And there's and another one of our other ideas was about teaching labor history in the Carpenter School, which was then ignored, and now labor history is being taught in the Carpenter School. This is like over a period of 15 years, so I see
how many women carpenters are there like that.
Although
have it accessible
specifically the I.
And then just federal
the
money
union
for
and the
jobs
apprenticeship,
and how,
the Carpenters Union, was not what I would consider sexist. We were never discriminated against within the school.
What did you connect
specific
with
issues that were barriers to women were never addressed specifically,
from
so it was a secondhand kind of diffuse kind of
something.
Way that sexism.
You like the idea of talking together.
Was. Express.
Yeah,
now
thing about how,
those issues are now being addressed.
Just feeling like that there
also,
is.
Also, we have women who are journey level carpenters who are now
really
part of
but hearing her
this
talk,
school and the training who are have been sought to take the role of teaching younger apprentices, which
that we're supposed to have, is we haven't reached yet.
A very significant, really. And we have women who are teaching at the school who are acknowledged as women, acknowledged as lesbians, and acknowledged as mothers, and as excellent carpenters. And they are actually role models for not only other women, but for men too. something. So I have to admit that from coming in as a rowdy gang of girls
building
with big mouths and ideas, not knowing very much about the industry at all, to having people who in the union and in the school who are very savvy and are acknowledged for their skills. I mean, that's not, I'm not trying to paint a rosy picture, but that actually exists, and that didn't not exist 15 years ago. So there's
to the idea of steward, does that seem such a concept to them?
No, it does seem to have been a big change, and I'm not sure exactly what brought that about, but...
See, I'm not, I don't work on the committee. I just know that it exists. I don't, I can't speak on the specifics, because I don't, I'm not participating in it, but that it exists and that there, that's all I know. You'll have to interview somebody else to find out what actually happens there.
And now, there's a new representative, Mike Powers, who is a civil service carpenter. Representative to the union. And he's very well versed in civil service law. And he's done a great job of going around.
Well, since I'm working with the city, I don't really, I'm not in outside construction anymore, but I did find out, just the other day when I was talking to women, a group of women who are trying, who are non-traditional funds for women programs, and there was a was on a panel there, and there was a woman who was probably in her 20s, young black woman who had just gotten her first year apprentice job 6 weeks before at the federal at the courthouse downtown, who talked about having weekly meetings with other women who are working for other contractors at the courthouse jobs, and going out bowling, and having having that solidarity on the job. There were,
it seems to be,
I don't know how many women exactly there were, but there were enough to
everyone's
have two bowling
under a lot
teams
of pressure
out of this one job, which is obviously a federal job. But that she, that was her first experience as a first year apprentice carpenter, that she would come onto a job and have a group of compadres there, women who are in all trades, who organize themselves as a support group and talk through issues on
well,
the job.
Hopefully not. But, you know, the custodian,
it's
a lot
really
of
great that she has that opportunity as a first
work
year
is now being done.
She specifically said that she really, you know, it was like a real great thing to her that she could go out with the girls from the job. So that's, you know, I was really pleased to hear that.
You had talked about this obstacle to women getting into civil service work because of that.
What about the cancer?
First, they have to have the apprenticeship. They have to have
5 years of journey level experience.
Well, the biggest thing that came out of it, I guess, is this list of possible.
Also, I don't think the
participants
in the
national,
but
a new
my
national
sense is that the numbers of women in the construction industry have not changed significantly. I think it's, I just have this very,
started.
My own observations, but not from
to find out, you know,
Bureau of Labor Statistics or anything, is that it's remained this sort of constant small amount of women in the construction trade industry. The only, but they haven't left the industry. We have not left the industry. We are still part of the industry, even though a small part. And that the women coming in now,
you know, I don't
are
know, a couple hundred,
generally younger. Sometimes
it's
their first jobs. And they come in, and what they say is that the men are more friendly to them, that some of the barriers are down, that the difficulty of maintaining livelihood in the industry exists still and are probably still harder for women than men. But these younger women that I've met,
have you kept up with any of the women out there?
Kind of confidence.
I'm very energized by that. Well, just that whole magazine, and that's where, to me, that's where the movement got started.
I think the men have gotten used to us being a part of the industry. Well, the problem still exists, but it's
Working in isolation.
Real pioneering days, so I think, are over in terms of social barriers to women in construction.
So, you haven't seen any organizing going on, monolithic kind of thing around here, like United Trades
we experienced in the 70s.
Do you think that there's going to be people who are going to pick up on this idea of a regional?
Mentioned new, and I'm wondering, what's going on in terms of women organizing?
Are you going to be involved in
this? Yeah, I would like to be.
How will you make the support groups such as new?
Well, I wouldn't mind being like the tradeswoman committee. Designated person to sit on that.
I hope you're not making a direct transcript from this interview, because there's a lot of things I really don't feel that I can speak on with any expertise. I mean, I'm not involved in women, in organizing and women in the trade at this point.
But would you say you're still working in the coordinating?
I know that...
what would your role be? You'd be like delegate.
I don't really know that much about advocacy. I just know, that there's the... New York Tradeswomen group. I don't
just network,
you know, which I can't really speak about.
Make connections.
I know that New is doing job development and construction with a little bit of renewed vigor now. I know, and
at the Board of Ed,
for what
reason, Susan?
I'm not sure. I'm not even sure this is official stuff. Can I stop the tape for a minute?
Response to that, or?
There really was. And people
so you were talking about advocacy.
But not directly. And,
so you, who were a pioneer and a leader of one of the really dynamic groups.
Yeah, somebody was saying today.
Do you miss organizing in that way? Like the kind of stuff you do with the tradeswomen?
She gets her job
or
back.
It's the fun memory.
Far-reaching implications for that whole plant meeting.
I miss the...
Which isn't a civil service title.
I think it was really 5 years...
Created job. She got fired.
Of my life that was really focused around construction
she came back.
And women in construction. And it was great. I have a lot of good memories. It was very creative. It was like a unique group.
Yeah, everybody's I think the whole, because she was a woman, because that's why she's suing.
It was great.
And that put them all on their toes.
Socially,
for me,
it was
it
a really interesting mix of people.
To me, it made everything worse.
Politically, we were all...
She wasn't there anymore. And
we weren't overtly... political in the sense that we still felt very much on the outside of the construction industry. It felt very kind of scary to us, but we,
on the other hand,
we kind of created a cultural group that supported ourselves and each other, that was able to move forward into that industry. Now I think that women are more into the industry. So I think we did do something. I think we did move ourselves inside, from the outside to the inside, by creating an identity for ourselves, as well as educating ourselves and each other, and trying to educate the unions about us. But that was more...
I just think they don't know what goes on.
Less overt. I think our presence and our strong continued presence for each other and ourselves was the main...
I mean, ultimately, if you follow it up, I guess you do have to blame the people at the top, because
they know something. They have this liaison person who
in different unions, electricians, women.
Well, I think she just went out recently.
Their own stories to tell of them.
I lost contact with
their own union, the carpenter women.
I had the energy to keep it going. It's like I had to keep everything going.
It's hard to say. I would say electricians,
but they're not going to offer.
But so she wasn't able to translate what she learned from that into policy. I know that you mentioned back in 1990 they were going to do a survey.
I wondered what you could say about changes that you've seen in the organizing climate on the job. In response,
the pornography thing that was a big issue with me. It's not blatantly there anymore, but you still do find pockets of it, which I'm horrified by when I do. But in some of the
main
shops, like
change
in the back,
civil service carpenters,
I can't believe there's any of it.
Issues
but,
is
the most flagrant.
I don't know exactly how to describe it. We had been organizing for a long time to get our own local, to address
tons of
within the carpenter
community.
The new civil service which is very different from outside construction. Working conditions are very different, issues are very different.
Affable relationships with
and we had a certain amount of freedom that the workers on the outside didn't have, because we had more or less permanent jobs. And
What coming up on the next?
What has happened is that one of our
looking out over the horizon.
We've gotten a response. We've gotten from the union and indirectly from the international was to put to get our own representative full time, which we only had part time representation before. From our own
where
ranks,
put your energy.
And so this is a trial period now to see whether that works for us.
Women Carpenters Committee.
We're having a meeting.
I'm excited about the National Trade Union Network.
And they seem to be pretty successful. And you are getting a lot of participation.
Right.
And
I don't know what to do.
Do you think
part of me feels like I should
sincere effort on the
organize
part of
the job
fund, or is it
I'm the only one doing it.
Yeah,
I'm hard to tell. Effort for some reason. I feel like it'd be easier to
I feel like going off.
Do it everywhere else but there. But then that creates just a
so, to go back to the subject of on-the-job organizing and this move for a
what's
city
sex equity thing that Susan Del Sandro is trying to talk him into doing?
Now there's been an appointment of an individual.
Which I sat on.
And so what do you see as the potential for that move?
Okay.
Working full-time.
Even
so,
though
I was sitting on the move for sex equity, which she wants me to get back on.
Five, six,
because
7 years
like
was to have a civil service.
But in terms
local,
of women, are they making any headway? Are they doing anything
with
it? What's
results
their
of
plan?
The organizing effort was the result, indirect result of the organizing effort was to have an appointment of one of our own rank and file spokespeople to be full-time representative for civil
gender
service.
You know, I mean, like they did this study. It's incredible.
We had part-time representation.
I mean, you know, the horrors.
Somebody who was more removed
gender inequity,
from
like
the rank and file
issues. Badly girls are treated by their peers.
So that's what we ended up with is an appointment of one of our own rank
and
file
spokespeople,
one of our strongest
math skills
and most courageous.
So that seems like a good thing.
Who has now the responsibility, full-time responsibility, to represent us. So that in a sense, even though it's not the outcome that we wanted, it's an outcome that has, I think, potential. And I think people in my union, the civil service department in my union, feel generally pretty good about at this point. A fair person, an honest person, somebody who's put himself on the line for around 1984, went up against our own
what
officials
do you see
and
as,
has appealed to the international
of
and has
that
organized
from
400 or 500 people at a clip
the board of it.
To sign
is there
petitions
any support
to express
for
our. So that's what we, and now he's part of. Now he's become our social
really
representative.
I mean, right now,
and I think the potential in there is that he understands and is closer to organizing.
And, you know, I guess it depends on who gets that job or something. At least I feel like a lot of it might be out from that office. And there is a new administrator.
Wants to put into effect a steward training program for civil service stewards starting this fall.
I don't really think, you know, and they did go through... Yeah, like they did sexual harassment
bring
training,
out the basic principles
but, you know,
of what steward can be in this context.
I mean, they have
to
tried
give us,
to go through the motions
to work with
in the good
civil service law and in practice
equitable,
and to give us the opportunity to communicate
like
with each other.
That work very well. It still feels like that it's...
And compare notes like and possibly work with each other from agency to agency to get some kind of consistency within all these agencies, which have very inconsistent labor practices with the same group of workers and tremendous... tremendous compromising of work rules and union rules. And
what about
so
the hearings that New York City held
you learn from each other share and get skills and also
their findings
from,
and
we're talking about
anything
all the major city agencies
from the city which is
being maybe able to link issues up and to work as a larger body. I mean, I can see that
they don't want to do it.
There are a lot of pretty smart carpenters who have been doing their own homework for years and have actually gone to have successful lawsuits around issues that the union has not chosen to represent them on for one reason or another, and we can see that information is power from one agency to the other. The precedents are there, we just never knew about the precedents. Now we can use these.
Well, now there's talk about.
We get together on a lot of these. We can use the precedents from one agency and bring them to another agency. I can see it already in my own agency, HHC. There was a lawsuit in the last series of layoffs, the Department of General Services.
Because they are planning to build a lot of schools.
They were laid off.
They're building one in my neighborhood.
Really?
You call it.
Guys.
Wrongfully.
I haven't seen anyone in the job.
And they,
they've been building a school for like 4 years.
They presented a lawsuit and got their jobs back as back wages that now we in HHC, who are about to be laid off, are presenting this precedent to our labor relations.
So anything to add?
And now potential, now that there's precedent, and we have somebody in who came from our ranks, now the opportunity may finally crack open that our own union will represent us legally in these battles, so we don't have to go to private lawyers that we read in the back pages of the chief and call their numbers up. That we're present now. We, as stewards, we would be able to get the precedents together of all these things that people have done on their own and present them to the union. And the union, we might be able to crack them open to give us the opportunity to use their own resources, which are our resources, really, to be able to use them to fight the battles that need to be fought.
Instead of using all those union lawyers to fight the indictments against the district.
Right, to use them for our own working conditions and our own jobs.
Now, you mentioned layoffs, and what's the impact of Giuliani's threat to privatize a number of hospitals in the city, and what's happening with the privatization issue and layoffs?
Well, there's impending, fairly large-scale impending layoffs in Health and Hospitals Corporation, where I work. What's interesting that the layoffs are not, privatization was the threat. The result of the threat was to reorganize Health and Hospitals Corporation. Not to privatize, but to reorganize, and the catchwords are now regionalization, and which is decentralization. HHC had a central office, which was the core executive brain, and capital programs, the construction and engineering brain, and central supplies, which was the purchasing brain, all of that for this system, which has 15 hospitals and satellite clinics. And what they're doing is they're dismantling the brain, and they're putting and laying off half, which is 600 people involved in this work in this central office unit. 600 are going to be laid off within a year.
So they're going to set up everything up in a centralized unit, but decentralized region on a regional basis.
Yeah, it's going to be.
It seems like it's a duplication of. It seems to me counterintuitive, like it would create more
bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Well, the idea I think was to facilitate a regionalization was to facilitate keeping it was the medical continuum. I mean, this is stuff that I'm certainly not an expert in, but I think it's from their thinking, it's a dual thing. It partly is laying off civil service workers and laying off managerial and civil service workers that they felt that they had were too expensive and hard to they didn't have total managerial prerogative over. So part of it is that, just like getting rid of bodies that have years and have pension plans and have years in the system and have vacation time and all these benefits that came with working for the city, that can, you know, in a swoop get rid of them and at the same by this creating this different system of units. Civil service busting and union busting, in the sense that they can get rid of workers with a tremendous amount of seniority without any repercussions.
And then they're going to bring in a workforce that's non-union?
Well, then, they don't really have a plan. They're going to give the prerogative to the regional directors. They want to make things, I mean, it's tricky because we're talking about labor, we're talking about healthcare systems. It's a complicated thing, but from the point of view of labor, right. What this reorganization is enabling them to do is to lay off a lot of workers with seniority and benefits, and possibly have a budget allotted to them which would enable them to hire temporary workers or contractors to do the work that was used to be done in-house. This is just from the trades point of view. There's a lot of aspects to this that I only have theories about. But the concrete example of some of the things that it could do to us is have somebody who's been a carpenter supervisor and supervisor mechanics who have who's worked for Health and Hospitals Corporation for somewhere around 10 years and has a lot of experience within the hospitals and the hospital systems, and has there's a tremendous amount of specific fund of knowledge that has been gained, can be laid off, with no repercussions. And what would be kept would be somebody with either temporary or with very little experience. So it's a total change of opportunity. I work with men who have made their careers, and they have sincerely catered their training towards hospital work, trade work, who know a lot about high pressure equipment, high pressure plumbing, dealing with emergencies, technical equipment, all kind of fire alarm systems with nurses, who are all going to be laid off, who when they came into the hospital system came in as a career, and who are now going to be out in the street. They don't have a plan for having this work be done. They just are going to be, they're going to be losing
a commitment
and people who are trained, who have experience. And I think the idea is that it would be the prerogative of the person in charge of the unit to either hire outside or hire temporary. It's the political catchphrase, you know. And we who have worked in the hospitals for myself 9 years, others less or more, see independent contractors coming in with very little commitment to the corporation and to the hospital system, come in, come out, do a bad job or a good job. A lot of times it's a bad job, change their name, move out of town. On paper it looks cheaper because their bids come in cheaper, but in the long run it probably is costing the taxpayer a whole lot more money. Nobody's addressing this issue from on that level or any other level right now. So it's very threatening, and it's very undermining of what civil service is. And to me, civil service is, you can say it's a lot of different things, but I look at it in the best sense, which is public works, you know, and commitment to public works and commitment of the corporate, of the public institution to the worker, who, you know, mutual commitment to. And I mean, I think that that's kind of a devastating thing, to break that whole system down without having a better plan, and only just considering privatization as a sort of some kind of panacea that anyone who looks into it knows it is not.
Now, I have two questions. One is, how are the workers that you're around, how are are people responding? Is there any political response? Is there any attempt to organize or like to arm people with information and to form some kind of, you know, political response to this?
Yeah.
Or, and do you see the union at all playing a role in that?
It's very, I don't see, I see a lot of, it's hopefully we're going to have a political response. It's such a huge issue. The unions and civil service are not used to dealing with these huge issues. They're used to dealing with, like, how can I get my kid braces? And I can't say I see the union taking this issue on politically. DC 37, Stanley Hill's union, is taking it.
So the District Council of Carpenters has been undergoing a fair share of negotiating with the government, shall we say, and trials. And so do you see any kind of, any difference in terms of the way people are relating to the union and this idea that there's going to be a general election of members, of the leaders, and what's happening?
Well, it's interesting because, try to bring up the subject on the job, you know, it's like, it's a very incredibly significant change in the union that we're going to have direct election of our district council officers. It's the first time in the history of the New York District Council ever we've had direct elections. We will have the opportunity to have direct elections. This is like a phenomenal thing. It's like basically it's saying we have the rank and file has the say, and not the business agents, not the power elite. And I bring this up on the job all the time. It's like people don't quite get it because the way they read the union papers and the way it's presented to them is like it's really downplaying this major significant change, and it's making it seem like business as usual, but at the same time there's a certain amount of reform that's happening in order to keep people happy enough to not take advantage of voting power to get the incumbents out. And it's worked. They're, you know, pretty good at this. I mean, carpenters don't have a history of radicalism. They don't have a history of, you know, there is a history of rank and file movement, but it's very small. It's been significant, through the gadfly system of the small percentage of people that stay at it and get benefits. The benefit comes to the rank and file, but it's not perceived as being as a result of this rank and file gadfly movement. It's perceived as coming from the top, and it's because it hasn't been a mass movement. So this is part of that. I mean, this whole government intervention and opening up of the election process to the rank and file really came from, as far as I can see, came from the gadflies. To the rank and file, it seems like it just sort of came from God, and that nobody sees real change as possible. The vision isn't necessarily there, but meanwhile, there are reforms that are happening as a result, because we are being catered to right now. This is a grace period for us in civil service. It's resulting in finally, I mean, seems like a minor issue, but finally the issue of linkage of pension from the outside, people who work on the outside and have maybe one or two credits short of getting a carpenter's pension. If they go to take this city job, which supposedly was more secure, they lost their entire pension contributions that they ever earned, and so now finally there's going to be a linkage because we've never left the union, we've never left the trade, but we've lost our pensions. And where does that go? We brought this up, and now there's a linkage being made, and it makes sense. It's our money. We should have, you know, we've earned it. It was part of our our pay package, and so now there's, you know, it's being acknowledged that it's your money and you take it with you if you move from one division outside to the other civil service. So that's like, that's a side, you know, that's a pandering to the rank and file, so that we are, you know, which is great. We want more. We want more of these.
So now I have two questions. This new administrator, Convoy, do you see any results of his work, or what is he? Is that filtered down to people on the job at all, or what's the reaction to him?
Yeah,
reaction to the government. Is there an anti-reaction?
I can't speak about the outside because I've been on the city for 9 years. In the city, people aren't even really that aware of it. They haven't figured it out that there's this independent. You know, there's this independent auditor of the Carpenters Union that
they
just figure there's a bunch of crooks, and they sort of got out of going to jail or something like that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that the settlement, the agreement allows for Pascal McGinnis cannot run in his home local 608, but he can be president of the international. This is the part that I can't figure out. I'm having trouble understanding.
Well, the carpenter would say, well, you know, they're all crooks. what else is new? I mean, the vision isn't there like it was even for the Teamsters in electing and having direct elections and being able to elect a real reform candidate. The vision isn't there for the carpenters of having a real reform candidate and getting that person in. So.
Let's see what. What would be a fruitful area to
this
look
interview
at.
Is really meanders. It's just
so the election. You don't see it as being a major event in the civil service world in terms of.
Well,
the
I just
council.
See. I see it has benefited us in certain ways in getting our own person in, getting full time rep. I think we're going to be getting stewards training. I think we're going to have regular meetings. A lot of the things that we've been putting out as our demands are now look like they're going to be met.
So these regular
something
meetings
else too, will be at the we've been fighting for so many years for simply being able to have a regular meetings. Official regular meetings of civil service carpenters on a schedule, so that we've been having them maybe extremely erratically and not really productively, and I think now we're going to be now having our own person in. He has a commitment to having regular meetings, having stewards training, giving us access to the union lawyers, getting our union work cards on time, things that are important to people that we've like just never. So these are indirectly the benefit of the
reform
process, because they're trying to get support to have this and unfortunately the carpenters don't necessarily see it as themselves being empowered.
what would it take for them to see to piece it together?
I think you're going to see more people running, rank and file people running for office. I think there's going to be an opposition to Devine. A rank and filer is going to run. He's probably not going to do great, but it's going to be. I think that it's just a crack that's going to be opened, and I think that it could be opened wider. It depends on how many of us get out there.
I noticed that this issue of Hard Hat News, which you in the past have done a lot of work on, that there were actual letters with real names attached to them. I'm assuming those are real names.
Uh-huh.
Not Brick Shields.
Right.
And so, and also there was an editorial that was encouraging carpenters to actually stand up and run. What do you think is the, do people actually see Hard Hat News, and is there a potential to use Hard Hat News as a wedge in this process of organizing, do you think? I mean, do people relate, respond well to it?
I've always thought people responded really well to Hard Hat News. First of all, they just take it, and it's like, this is for, you know, this is about us. Mm-hmm. I think it has that potential, I really do. I think it needs to be a little bit more populous. I think it needs to be a little flashier, have more dirt, and more...
I've been arguing for a gossip column.
Yeah. I think it needs to be a little less polemical. But I think every time I've ever brought Hard Hat News onto a job, people just glom onto it. I don't know if they always find what they want, but they just assume this is for me, and this has information I need, and they're pretty starved for it.
What do you think about Hard Hat News sponsoring forums? Like, you know, on the different, like, have a forum about the carpenters, or have a forum about what's going on with the iron, or have a forum on corruption in the building trades, or, you know, the role of the government.
I think it's a great idea to have forums. I think having a forum on corruption in the building trades will attract the radical fringe that we know. I think having forums that have to do more that have to do with the industry in a more general way, could do good. I think that having forums that cater to the left wing of the trades, which is tiny, won't work. But I think that having forums that have to do with the industry itself and have a plethora of material about the industry, you know, that's
what kind
like
of
pure.
Material?
I have to think about that. I mean, I think there's.
I think that with the changes that are taking place now,
I think that economics would be a big part of it.
Yeah.
And I think that the boom and bust cycle of the industry and how that, like, you know, is that, does that end up leveling, or what job future kinds of things would attract a lot of people and would, you know, our industry is, you know, it's just so directly related to the economy and the real estate industry. I think those kinds of things would people, you know, to have some kind, you know, to analyze would attract more people than an analysis of corruption, because corruption is just, people mostly see it as a given.
Yeah.
I think it would take something else to have people see it as more than a given, see it as a drain on the industry.
I'm interested in the ways to, you know, to really tap into the questions that are important and relevant for building trades workers that would connect, and so I think it's a fruitful area to think about, you know, because this is, it seems to me, a dynamic time for the building trades, you know, and so I think that you know, to get people who have a history of organizing,
absolutely.
But to do it in a way, like you say, that's populist and relevant and something that will, you know, connect with the
right. Most people see, it's like, look at all the people that came out to that City Hall rally for jobs.
Right.
It was not a radical event, but it was
could
emotional.
Have been. Right. And the other thing is, I mean, because if there was some analysis there.
Right. Unfortunately, yeah, I mean, right, analysis. Well, yeah, we tried to do that in Hard Hat News,
right,
to say who was steering this rally and for what means. I mean, the fact that there was this huge rally where people, like, could have closed down the city, and then there was nothing after that.
Well, there's a lot to be said. And what about the question of what gets built and who decides?
Right.
And here we have a housing start industry that stopped, and yet we need housing. And, you know, where's the money going?
Right, right.
Why don't the developers develop when, you know, so all of these questions, I think, are, you know, but to have an analysis rather than just a narrative or just, you know, some union leader saying, we're going to get jobs.
Right,
you know,
right.
We're going to elect Mario Cuomo and, you know. So I see that looking through your United Tradeswoman flyers and all of the work that you did in terms of analyzing what the law was and what your rights were under the law and what wasn't being met and trying to hold these people to a standard. It was a tremendous amount of work. But that's the kind of thing that I think, you know, is trying to be done now in terms of the building trade. So glad to see you interested still.
Okay, so that's basically it. I only have one more question, which is about staying power. And here you are, and you're still working as a carpenter, and you're still involved in the union.
Right.
And you're about to celebrate a birthday. And
not gonna put that on tape.
Not gonna put that on tape. It's a birthday. And so I'm wondering, how are you finding your sources of support, and how are you keeping on?
Well, I'm not sure I am, but I mean, basically, I think I'm in a kind of a lull right now in my, I still am in the industry. I think making a decent living is like a big part of staying power. I mean, you know, there's a certain amount of job satisfaction in being a carpenter. That's been part of my staying power. Relating to this, you know, being part of a large, important industry in New York City, and knowing hundreds and hundreds of people in this industry. I mean, this may seem really corny, but there is a certain, even though the Brotherhood isn't the Brotherhood you want it to be, it's still, there's still a, there still is a concept of quote unquote Brotherhood in terms of, you know, seeing, I mean, it's a little corny, but you know, you see people, we go on the subway and you see all these guys with G-Rock dust on their shoes. And you know, and their, you know, Daily News, and you know, and the cooler, and you just, you know, they're you and you're them, and you're, you know each other. You don't have to know each other's names, you know. You know, I don't know.
Part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't feel isolated.
Yeah.
Being in this industry, you're not never isolated, because you get on the subway at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you're, you know, you read people's shoes,
right.
You know.
Yeah. I do that too, and I look for their bags of tools.
Yeah, and you know what their lives are like, and you know they know what your life is like to a certain degree. As a woman, if, you know, they're not sure, but you know what their lives are like, and it's, you know, it's a dangerous but exciting occupation. I think that's what, and it could be better, but I have to say I admire a lot of things about the people that I work with. I've learned a lot being in construction, and my community is enormous.
You mentioned this danger, and you are so involved in the health and safety issue, and I'm wondering you said like the privatization issue is key now and foremost, but are you still involved in health and safety? Are there any issues that rise up in terms of your?
Yeah, I think we got to a higher standard around the asbestos issues from when we first started doing fire code violation work in the hospital system and opening up ceilings and having asbestos fall down on your head. I know my shop I can't say it's perfect, but there's like a very much more informed and alert way of dealing with asbestos now, where nobody works with asbestos when, you know, if it's perceived, the job stops, crew comes in, cleans it up.
That's,
I mean,
a big victory.
Yeah, it's not always cleaning up the way that you'd want them to, but it's like there's no more pushing people to do it, just do it. People are pretty aware of that asbestos, and the shop has, with some exceptions, there is a standard, which is you don't endanger yourself with asbestos, you don't endanger yourself with anything, and we've stopped so many jobs. We go into hospitals sometimes where people work with asbestos, they don't say anything other, and we go in and we say, like, do a test, and then we'll work here, and they have to do it. And so, you know, I feel like the work that we did around that has paid off to a certain extent.
Did you ever get right to know training?
We did. We got it.
Okay.
I mean, we didn't get it regularly.
Uh-huh.
You know, as those things go, it was, it was good. I mean, I think it made it official, put the official stamp on that you don't work with certain things and you only work, you know, the respirators and the chemicals. I think it made a difference. You know, those things are generally pretty boring, but I think it gives the official stamp to, you know, to your rights.
And you, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was good. I feel like we got pretty far on that.
You haven't said very much about being a steward. You're still a steward?
I'm still the steward.
Have you been,
for my shop.
I mean, there hasn't been another election, or you were re-elected, or what's...
There hasn't been another election. I mean, I think I suffered a little bit from the long-termitis of not having any opposition,
an opponent,
you know. You get really, you do tend to get flack. I mean, I would encourage an opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Are
you trying to train any people to come behind you and take up the burden?
Well, there are people that I speak to who help.
So are you trying to develop leadership?
I guess I can't say I have done a lot on that right now. I mean, right now we're sort of fighting for our own. We're trying to find it. A foothold of how to conduct this fight that we have ahead of us. I encourage people to talk to me and to directly talk to the union. We are involved in a kind of chaotic group struggle right now, where everybody's we need all the hands we can get. People sent me like their ideas of how this can be fought, everybody's working on this layoff right now. So
are you still enjoying being steward?
I'm looking forward to steward training as a fresh start, and so that's, I sort of, you know, I'm in a lull now, but I feel like there's the structure's is changing to a certain degree. We have more reception in the district council now. There's this commitment. I feel like I need that encouragement now and that push from outside myself. And I feel like we could get a second wind on being a steward and change. What I'm excited about now is changing the structure of being a steward within the city system, which it's been so unstructured. It's been the system was set up to discourage activism, and it has worked on me to a certain degree. Dealing with mostly with emergencies, but since I worked pretty hard to get to a point where we would have, I mean, for 5 years, what I've been saying with a lot of the other stewards is we need a different structure, we need training, we need information, we need, you know, we need meetings, we need each other, blah, 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 and I think we're going into that phase, which will be good. It will be good for me personally. I think it will be good for other, for the whole picture. And then I also look forward to a time where I think I have been a steward I don't need to be a steward for forever. I think it is. I think what the point you brought up about having somebody else come behind is an important one.
In England, they had this movement of like stewards' councils, where stewards.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, it seems like it's something that you know, we're so far away from. But,
right. You know, yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's the idea of the also TDU was like the stewards are the power in the union.
Yeah.
They're the first.
First line of defense.
First line of defense, and like the
offense,
most important one.
Right.
Yeah. I agree with that completely, and that's part of my. My looking forward to this stewards training is like
the connection,
right?
And also, the seems like a lot of energy will come out of it, and other, you know.
Oh, absolutely! I see. I mean, it's like, you know, now it's August. You know, I see September as like a new starting point for all the stewards in the city.
Okay, so anything you want to add in terms of advice?
No.
Okay.
I need advice.
Thanks for your.
Okay.
So, advice. What words do you have for?
I think over like the period that I've been semi-activist, it's like it's just that, you know, you're not always going forward. That sometimes there are lulls, and you just can maintain momentum, you know, maintain equilibrium, and then, you know, go for those little crests and. That you need the stamina to do that.